Aloha, everyone. This is Ashley from GoldenGoddesses.org, and welcome to the second episode of Threshold to Ascension Radio. Thank you for holding space for us as we work through some of the little kinks that often come up when you're launching a new vision, stepping into the unknown, taking that brave first step into seeing the new reality created. In just a few moments, I'm going to introduce my guest for tonight, and I'm so excited to have Paul with us and all the emails that you've been sending to me sharing how much you're looking forward to hearing about his journey. But I did first want to again thank Don at BBS for all he's doing to help me get this show launched, and to all of you who tuned in last week to the show with Laura Eisenhower. There was so much powerful information. We celebrated the 8-8 Lion's Gate yesterday. We're moving into a solar eclipse early Saturday morning, North American time. In fact, I'll be doing a link-up teleconference that morning. And then we're moving out of the 8-8 gateway. It comes to its conclusion on August 12th. Though there's still a lot of energy moving, not to mention our dear friend Mercury retrograde. Just keep breathing. This is indeed a time when things don't go quite to plan, to stay in your heart and to, in a way, kind of play the game of testing your self-mastery. How do I respond? Do I take a deep breath and allow the universe to bring things full circle, or do I get frustrated? I mentioned that we would announce the winner of our sweepstakes for the 30-minute reading with Laura Eisenhower tonight, and that is Claire Chamberlain, the goddess Claire Chamberlain. I'll be sending you an email with the details. Thanks to all of you that entered, that provided feedback on last week's show, and also suggestions for future guests. I do want to mention that next week my guest will be Susie Hansen. She's a contactee who really tunes into the consciousness of the benevolent connections with our star family. And I'll be sending out the announcements of all that's coming up over the next couple of days. But without any further ado, I want to bring in my guest, Paul Richardson, who I first had the chance to meet via the phone November of last year, 10 months ago, when I had the honor of doing Paul's recap and counseling after his transpersonal release session. And during that conversation, we kind of got to know each other a little bit, kept in touch by email, and it just synchronistically, as the universe provides, Paul reached out just a few weeks ago to celebrate and to share his mission going blossoming and expanding. A little bit about Paul. There's a lot more in the BBS archive on our show page, but he has had such an amazing career and background. And although his heart's mission and the vision before he went into university was sustainable architecture, and he graduated with his postgraduate degree in that field, like many of us, our day-to-day life takes over, especially when family comes into play, responsibilities, and how do we make it in the 3D world. He's very successful in the corporate side of his architectural and project managing skills, being the lead person on many 5- and 6-star deluxe hotels like St. Regis, Ritz-Carlton's, creating penthouses for presidents and very wealthy people. And although the material success was there, there was still something missing in his heart. And he continued on his journey with this little nagging voice that many of us can relate to, that there must be something different. He found himself at a point trying to honor his path, but yet caught up in the regular work world. He's traveled throughout the world, building and constructing and project managing. There came a time, however, in about 2013, when his voice of his soul started to speak a little bit louder. He started to think that architecture may not be his path, and he tried to appease it by following another passion, which was music. But that, too, didn't really fill his soul's calling. He hit a major juncture on his journey, like many of us do, and began the looking within to find the truth of what his heart's calling. And of course, oftentimes it is special occasions, in this case, Paul's 40th birthday in the early 2016, when he truly knew it was time to begin making drastic changes. And at that point, he dedicated himself to daily meditation and self-reflection to either find peace with the path in the corporate side of architecture or to ask Source to open up what it was meant to be for him. In September of 2017, Paul journeyed to Peru to the Amazon rainforest to spend time there with the medicine men, the shamans. And for him, that was a turning point, a catalyst. When he returned back to Kazakhstan, where he was immersed in the 3D project managing the fit out of a 6-star hotel, he started receiving details and downloads, things that he could no longer ignore. And that awakened with him a deep sense of renewed purpose. And I love how he says that the creativity and inspiration that had been drummed out of him through the corporate world was now back with full force. And I often tell people when I'm doing counseling, there comes a time when your higher self turns up the volume until you can no longer ignore it. One of his initial callings was to go to New Mexico, where he found a large parcel of land. And he had visions of building a community there, but more so than a community, also including a living school that would be an educational and inspiring platform to teach the tools of self-reliance, natural building, permaculture, etc. That led to the founding of his company, Haven Earth, which he felt he needed to bring to life to be able to offer some platform to assist with the transition into a community-centric model of living. We'll talk about his journeying to South Africa in 2018, where he met Alosha Linov, and also his venture to Moscow, Russia, where in May 2018, believe it or not, he and Alosha sat down as part of a government conference in Russia, talking about sustainable building and pilot projects outside the capital city. He's working in harmony with Alosha at BioVeda Academy and many others in his spirit group that have been called together as different pieces of the puzzle to share their vision. I love how he says his driving force is to create a platform that can facilitate the co-creation of sovereign, creatively self-reliant communities globally. And there's so much more to your bio, Paul. I hope I did you justice, but I just want to say thank you. I know it's the wee hours of the morning in Turkey, but welcome to the show.
Hello, Ashley. Thank you for a lovely introduction. It's very nice. Yes, it's still dark outside. It's 5 a.m., just after 5 a.m. here, but I got up and did a little meditation and just grounded myself in the space to be able to be present with you now in the United States in the hours of the evening there, I think.
Well, that's beautiful. And we do have listeners from Australia and from Israel and from across the world as well. And I also love, you know, to me, I think of you as a new reality visionary, right? A sustainable architect, a visionary eco community developer. And I love how you talk about getting together with eco wizards to create the new reality. Before we get deep into your projects, part of what we like to do here on Threshold to Ascension is have people share what it was that took you from your corporate life into having the courage to fully step into this mission, and how the obstacles you may have encountered along the way, you turned them into opportunities. Can you take a few moments and kind of set that stage for us?
Yeah, I think, I was always questioning things as far as I can remember. What's my path? What am I supposed to be doing? I always felt like I had a strong path in my life. I felt like a really deep calling to do something important. I felt from a young age that, but I think as I grew older, that path seemed to become more daunting for me, actually, in some ways, as I kind of got into the corporate world. It became almost alien, you know, the idea of having a life path and a life purpose. And if you started talking about that kind of stuff in the corporate world, it doesn't go down so well, as you can imagine, especially in the world of architecture and engineering and these kind of things. It was just something in me. It was affecting my life so much, not being on my path. That really, I think, motivated me finally to kind of make some drastic changes. And, you know, part of that was the self-reflection and the self-mastery and, the meditation practice. But as the more I got into that practice of daily meditation, it really started to have kind of a multiplying effect in my personal life, in my work life. I used to come home from the construction side of, you know, big project and meditate on lunchtime, and I would find that all of the stress and all of the issues that were arising in the day, when I came to that space of meditation and contemplation and just connecting in the present moment and connecting to higher guidance, that actually the answers would start to just flow. Actually, I would go back in the afternoon, like renewed again, and resolving all of the problems without really a stress. It just totally kind of transformed how I could see things. The stresses weren't the same.
And I'm curious, did you find that once you chose to meditate that it was easy for you to do it on a daily practice, or it took a little while for that to be just an easy thing to do, just like brushing your teeth in the morning?
Yeah, exactly. I think it was important. I tried meditation before. I'd gone to Vipassana retreat in 2012. I had, tried to bring meditation practice in, but I needed to find something that worked for me, and I found something that was, only around 15 minutes, and it was that, just having something short that I could connect with, that allowed that to grow and develop. I think if I had to do like an hour or two a day, it would have been just maybe overwhelming, and it wouldn't have stuck. But just doing it every day, a small amount, was key, I think, to kind of breaking through the limitations I had with just, being able to connect in meditation. And it, and over the period of time, it grew and then started drawing to me people like yoga teachers and spiritual people in Kazakhstan, where I was. And we started to become friends, and we'd start a little group meditation, and they wanted to be in my energy. They wanted to be in my energy because it was starting to transform. I was starting to have a metamorphosis in myself.
And about how long would you say in Earth time it took from when you began that practice to truly begin to seeing the fruition of the universe bringing back into your life these people and the experiences and the synchronicities?
I would say it was about a year, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And it really started to have, like a magnetic effect. It definitely helped me with the stress before that, and managing my life better. But in terms of actually that transformation of my energy field, possibly and starting that would start to draw in people on a similar frequency, I guess.
And I think that's important for the listeners to really take on board, and I know many of you have, that oftentimes it's the small steps, the little things that we do, just taking those steps that accumulate to the amazing results like your mission fully blossoming. I mean, this really, in a way, was over a 7-year process for you. You actually got your degree in sustainable architecture. And so that had been a passion of yours, but it took a little bit of pieces coming together, your own soul growth, finding this discipline for all those puzzle pieces to come together for you. Would that be an accurate way to describe it?
Yeah, I think so. It was a combination of lots of things that had happened over that, you know, kind of a period of time after university that brought me to the point of kind of actually, you know, not necessarily a good point. I felt like it was a crossroads, you know, when I did turn to dedicate myself to that practice. I just really felt dark forces were starting to creep into my life. And that really made me realize that them forces are real, both light and dark. And now it was my time to choose. How did I want my path to unfold? And at that moment, I really felt like I had to make a decision for my future, and for my family's future, because I think we don't realize enough, or maybe people in society don't realize enough, how powerful our thoughts are, how powerful the way we think and the way we, you know, the way we express ourselves is in terms of creating our future reality. And I was, from the extremities of my life before that, I realized I was creating that in my life, all of the hardship and all of the struggle. So it was, it made sense for me to dedicate myself to the meditation, because I felt like that would be the key that would, you know, kind of open the door to my finding my passion again and just being present.
And in your circle that was around you when you were the successful corporate architect, how did that community support you or question you when you made the move into stepping into what truly was your field of study, sustainable architecture? But did you go through any initiations in that transition?
Yeah, I definitely, I mean, I kept it quite to myself in some ways, apart from the people that I felt would understand. And I wasn't having any really social circles in the work environment. I was actually traveling quite a lot for the projects. That was actually part of my job, was kind of like a problem solver, resolving issues with, you know, why things weren't working and why, you know, weren't happening as they were supposed to. But yeah, I think it was a conscious choice in a way to start surrounding myself also with people I felt their energy was more aligned with where I wanted my energy to be.
It's okay. Finish your thought.
No, I was just going to say I did, you know, get support from some friends, but I think they were, you know, people have resistance and were like, oh, don't, you know, they were telling me like, oh, don't meditate too much or things like this, you know. And when I decided to go to Peru, you know, some close friends were saying, oh, I'm afraid you're going to change and this kind of thing. And it's just amazing how people, their own fears hold you back, hold us back, because you know, they don't want you to change into someone that maybe they think will see through or something. There's some paranoia in people for us changing. Maybe they think we won't, you know, love them anymore or something like that. But I found it the complete opposite, actually.
That you loved them more, that you had more space in your heart.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and I, and I And I think that's important also, that when we are truly comfortable with who we are, you know, and comfortable being authentically who we are, that's the frequency we hold. And that's the frequency that begins to draw into our circle, such as happened to you in Kazakhstan, more people that were interested in sharing that energy through meditation or through the community brought together. And that's an important part, I think, of the ascension journey, is that comfort level of being authentically who you are. And when you're true to yourself, letting go of worrying about what other people think.
Yeah, exactly.
And so you came back from Peru and had a profound situation there. And as you said, everything started to change and you began receiving details and downloads and had that renewed sense of purpose. Can you describe a little bit about what that experience was like and what we were getting downloads about?
Yeah, I mean, when I came back from Peru, I was like an open book right then, and very much wanting to share that story that I had, the awakening I had, that experience that I had, and it was like, how could I say it? I wasn't sleeping very much, to be honest. Once I came back, I was. Maybe sleeping a few hours a night. I was just so inspired with creativity again. Like, I was sketching. I remember, like, I know how to sketch. I know how to draw. I know how to be creative. It was like I was given a new set of tools that I forgot I had. And it was like through that process of opening to the creativity that just stuff was flowing through me. I was drawing ideas for, you know, recycling water systems, natural systems, and then I would look on internet the next day and find that that was already created, and just all these kind of things. And it just seemed very logical, actually. It just seemed very straightforward. But like in another sense, it was very exotic as well, because the information that was coming through was like taking what I had thought about through my education and through this, you know, through life and observing, you know, the world of conspiracy and opening myself over time to the situation on the planet. But it just kind of brought all that together and showed me, like, everything happened for a reason in your life. It's brought you to this point to have this knowledge, have this information, have this awareness. And then I don't know, you know, it's hard to say whether it was, you know, a higher self or guides, but that information was literally, I wasn't talking, I wasn't contriving things, and I wasn't, I was just going with that flow, and it was leading me in the direction that I've eventually come to now.
And how would you describe, everyone is unique and different, the way they receive guidance and they receive downloads? Was it full thought forms? Was it voice? How would you describe the way it happened for you?
I think more it was just, I was so present in the moment. I mean, I feel like I still maintain that. And it was almost like more imagery. Mm-hmm. Because I think I'm a very visual person, obviously. I've had to, from a young age, I think, had the ability to kind of perceive space that doesn't already exist, or perceive things that don't already exist necessarily. So, you know, I could imagine things that I could create. But I think that went to sleep, you know, and then it came back to life with, like, on steroids.
Well, and I think that's beautiful, because as we interview other guests and they talk about the different ways of perceiving, it helps the listeners to know there isn't one way to receive information. And it's that, as you very, very beautifully said, it's being present in the now moment that opens up the channels of guidance and inspiration to come through. And we're going to take just a short commercial break. But when we come back, I want to talk about how going to New Mexico and then going on to South Africa began to opening up doors to where you are now. So we'll just take a short break.
Okay.
I'm Chief Joseph, and I'd like to talk with you about a product called Stop Itch. It's an all-natural product that stops itching and scratching instantly from all types of rashes, including eczema, psoriasis, dermatitis, poison oak, all bug bites, and it's safe for kids and babies of all ages. And for a limited time, it's half off at www.theskingod.com or 888-391-5432. Thank you.
So before we went on that short commercial break, we were talking about the download of information that you got. And part of the guidance you got in October 2017 was to go to the United States and view this parcel of land in New Mexico, where perhaps your vision expanded even more. Would you like to share that with the listeners and how that became the birthing point of your company, Haven Earth? Bless you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, exactly. It's kind of interesting, actually. It was very synchronistic, the whole thing. And I love, actually, the story of how it happened. It was about 2 weeks after I came back from Peru. A friend of mine, a Serbian friend of mine, who he's an architect, and he was working on the same project for the same company. And also, but he was inclined to more spiritual things. And he was leaving Kazakhstan right then, and it was that night I said goodbye to him. As I was walking him home to say goodbye, one of my tooth fell out in my mouth. I was eating like a brownie. There was nothing hard in there, and my tooth came out, and I was like, what? And so I was carrying my tooth with me to his house, walking with him, and then it was kind of emotional goodbye, and then I went back. And I couldn't sleep at all. And I was just receiving, I started receiving this information to research and find this land. So I got guided to a gold mine in Arizona. And gradually it wound me up in this at this piece of land in New Mexico, northern New Mexico. And I was working full time. I didn't know what to do. I had responsibilities and all of these kind of things. So I decided to trust the guidance, and I basically left my corporate job and booked a flight to the US, and I just left. I really, it was such a strong feeling in me that this was what I had to do, and I knew that I had to follow that guidance. And And the whole journey to New Mexico was very interesting. I kept seeing a little, like a bee, like a honeybee on the menu on the airplane, on the hotel entry card and all this thing. And I noticed it, but I didn't think too much of it. And then I got to the land eventually in New Mexico, this beautiful, approximately 200 acres, and the agents were there. And they were explaining the land and et cetera, et cetera. And I asked if did anybody else come and see the land before then, and they said yes. There was two ladies. They love beekeeping, and they said this land is perfect for bees. And so I was like, wow. And I just got that shiver thought in my body, mm-hmm. And I explained them the my journey there. And then right at that moment. And this was in November. This is in November when, you know, frost has already started. A bee came flying in between us and landed on my hand, landed on top of my hand, walked around and then flew away. And they were just like in shock. so it's kind of been like that since then. Just synchronistic things happening. And Since November, I went, I started traveling. I went to Africa, it was around the same time Alosha Linov just came into my inbox. He was running a workshop in South Africa on Michael Tellinger's property. And I was subscribing to Michael Tellinger's on his mailing list. So I'd received this, and I just had this strong sense that this was very synchronistic, very synchronistic. So I contacted Alosha, and we kind of hit it off straight away.
And if you just give a little more of Alosha's background for the listeners who aren't that familiar with him, the organizer of BioVeda Academy and your partner in a way now in collaborating, but can you just give a little of Alosha's background?
Yeah, I mean, Alosha, I think about, he never really was too much in the corporate world. He had his own business doing kind of like a funky decoration company. And then he got onto his own journey to his property in Johannesburg. He's basically turned that into a self-sufficient homestead, and he's created a model from that. How to recycle, upcycle water, how to, you know, harvest all these things, natural building, water purification systems. And he's created, you know, online courses so people can learn all these tools over, you know. And
so you were called to meet up with him at an event he was putting on in South Africa. And what happened once you got to South Africa?
I got there was about 20 people in the group at the workshop, and we are there to build a couple of, like, a small dwelling, dome dwelling. And I shared, I think it was the second day, Alosha had asked me to share some of my drawings because he had seen some of the sketches and liked them. I shared, like, a small presentation with the group and explained my vision of Haven Earth that had been coming through. And it was amazing, you know. It was amazing, just the rest.
Yeah, and can you go a little bit deeper into that vision of Haven Earth Center, because this is really important in the totality of what you're drawn to do now.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think for me, I always had this feeling to want to live in nature, but I felt like there was, you know, kind of, there was, you know, two worlds. One was the regular dominant system and that world. And then, you know, you should go and live on your own if you want to live outside the system. And I felt like it wasn't, we needed to create some platform, some transitional way where we can still have the things from that we've created in this system that still benefit and fit a new model, a new paradigm. We don't have to throw the, you know, the baby out with the bathwater. So this for me was really important to understand, like, what was that missing piece that was going to allow these kind of organic communities to develop? Because I heard from many people they were interested to live in some kind of community, but no one seemed to really know how to do it. There was no real models that were showing a way. Yes, there was a few, you know, here and there, but nothing that would give like a comprehensive way to develop these kind of projects on a global level. So for me, Haven Earth was really trying to become that transition, not trying to tell people how they should live necessarily or to create some kind of sense of utopia, but to educate and empower people to be able to co-create them communities themselves with the support and guidance of a company like Haven Earth. Because I think essentially we can't make this transition on our own, and no one company or government can do that. It needs to come from people. They need to stand up and take ownership of their own life and their own amazing abilities to transform the world. And I think we want to empower them through Haven Earth rather than to disempower them, I think, is the key.
And I love when you talked with me earlier about Haven Earth Center, how you talk about these different communities, the central building, kind of the starting point being the heart and the brain of the community and building off from there, and how really this self-supportive, self-regenerative living models are blueprints of transitioning into what we see as the new earth. Would that be an accurate way to describe it?
And when I, you know, when we in Russia, we went to Moscow in May this year. It was really out of the blue, as usual. I've been living in Airbnb and in different countries since basically last September, really. I haven't put my roots down somewhere because I feel like my roots are within me, and connection to source. And so in we got invited to this conference in Moscow to it's part of a think tank to develop sustainable cities of the future.
And it was a government conference, correct? It was actually these bureaucrats.
exactly. It was actually put on by the medical the you know the head of the medical industry institutions in there because you know it was spawned by them because of the deteriorating health conditions and things like this. But you know but it was great and it's you know from that event come a group we created a group and we're you know developing further to build pilots. But I think the thing that really struck me about that was that it's a very cumbersome, very bureaucratic kind of dinosaur, you know, trying to change a light bulb. You know, this is a very delicate thing about what we're doing to create this new reality, creating this these new communities. But the hands of government are just very clumsy, I think, when it comes to these kind of things. And it just felt like they weren't able to, you know, like they can't step outside of the paradigm. To envision the new, it's you know how can they fix it from within almost, so I think that's why our message that we were sharing really resonated with a lot of people, and now we're working with a group in Moscow to kind of develop the process of what it is, you know, what exactly does the center do, because we see the Haven Earth Center, each project itself in the development of a community would become a school, actually, would be a living model. So, you know, normally a construction process is very entropic. It just uses more uses energy, it uses money, and it often uses a the soul of people. You know, you find a lot of companies are going bankrupt after, you know, being on a construction process. So I saw that the construction process could become this amazing learning opportunity, like a sacred spiritual event that would, and they would be geared around this center building, which would have a multi-purpose. During the construction, it would be the heart of the school. People would come and learn there, and also we would offer other tools which would help people to transition. And kind of unclutter the programming to allow them to be more accessible in the presence to help create these communities. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, very well said. And I, you know, what you're sharing about the old paradigms can flow from your echo and those trainings to really all walks of life and all visions that people have. Don't be stymied by the old paradigm. Be the one who chooses to look outside the box and look at a higher frequency. What are the possibilities of creating what we know is truth? And I believe that's a beautiful thing you're doing with Haven Earth Center in your collaboration with Ashav and this group, call it a mastermind group without wanting to overplay that word of it just seems like, you know, the water specialist comes in and then the drainage specialist comes in and the architect. And from what you shared with me, the universe is bringing you all together, and you have this very powerful co-creation and collaboration of birthing the new and letting go of it hasn't been done that way before. And instead of saying that, saying, why not? Let's do it this way now.
Yeah, exactly. And to be, you know, I keep checking in with myself in this process because it's so easy to start getting caught up in the ifs and the buts and the ifs and the buts. Oh, you know, one day it might seem like, oh, the future's brilliant and there's going to be some amazing things. And already you're detaching yourself from the moment, projecting yourself into the future, and maybe it feels good. And then in another time, it's the opposite. You know, if something negative per se happens, and you're projecting into the future that reality. And I'm just keep coming back to the present moment.
Because very well said.
That's the only moment that exists. So what am I doing anywhere else? You know, and I fully trusting that I wouldn't be here now and I wouldn't have come this far if there wasn't a specific plan that and a path that this has taken.
And so your community centers, the concepts, and obviously each one's a little bit different. Some are more personal and some are larger complexes, if you will. But I love how, and I know your website, havenearth.org, is still being birthed. And on Ashok's, he talks about the water. He talks about the wastewater. He talks about the food. Can you give a little brief overview of all the systems that come together to create this sustainability? Understanding that people can dive deeper on the websites if this is something that talks to their hearts.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, generally, the systems, I mean, the way we're looking at it really is that it's to the microcosm where the homestead, like a one hectare homestead principle, where it's enough for a family, like kind of family compound almost, which should self-support that family from there. So it's rather than necessarily where there's a big farm and then a bunch of houses, maybe they're eco-friendly houses, but rather to engage everything on that property. So nothing leaves their 1 hectare. Their wastewater is recycled through constructed wetlands and biochar filters, all naturally derived and created on, you know, very low budget. You know, the buildings are made from the earth and suited to that climate and region. We're using permaculture principles to develop that land. So it's self-regenerative, it's mimicking nature. So we're going to, you know, create essentially, you know, in the first few years, it takes time to establish permaculture, of course. But the thing about it is, in the name itself, perma, is it's a permanent thing. It replicates nature. So once it establishes itself, it's, you know, it's on its way, and you don't have to maintain it too much. You know, one hour a day, and you can maintain your property and have food. So it's really about a whole systems approach, not only the building, but, you know, harvesting the rainwater, capturing the rainwater in, you know, water storage tanks, and really seeing each homestead project as a model of perfecting that model to self-reliance. And then in essentially each homestead is a sovereign entity within that sovereign community. But there's not necessarily a really forced kind of setup, I think, where people, you know, have to do too many things within the community. We imagine we'll agree that with people as the community develops. I don't, you know, it's kind of hard to start imagining how to tell people how to live when we're trying to move away from that paradigm and ask people to listen to their own heart and how they should live. I mean, we can give guidance and help people heal and deprogram in that process.
Well, and I think each community or each project has its own consciousness, if you will, its own oversoul, its own intention that will play out. And, you know, community and intentional living is a whole nother radio show, right? There's a whole, I chatted briefly about that. It's a whole nother radio show. And I am going to invite you to stay on after we finish here. We've got about 10 more minutes. We'll do an after the show again. And Momo and Marie, I'll ask your questions in the after show, which will be on the YouTube channel. But I wanted to take a moment to kind of dive into this event that's happening over the autumn equinox, where people, if they're drawn to come to Turkey, I know Bodrum is a beautiful part of Turkey, to actually have this hands-on experience. And, you know, it's from how you're living on the land and the food that you're eating and the yoga that you're doing, and the whole experience is much more than just learning how to build construction. Would you like to just share a little bit about your and Asha's intention for this event in Turkey so the listeners can understand?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the project is a one permaculture farm project, actually. And the owner of the land, he was in the corporate world, and he decided, a young guy in his 30s, he wanted to do this and build a home off the grid and a farm. He wants to help his parents. They can come live with him. And we really, you know, Alosha, myself, in the workshop, we, you know, we're teaching the skills, but really it's more than that. It's such an empowering, healing, spiritual kind of a workshop. It's like almost like ceremony. It's very interesting. There's so much validation that happens. So many people stepping up and stepping into their power, and we hold a really sacred space, so people can feel free and open to share their things that they can't share in the regular world. You know, this is the kind of events that you connect with people that you will stay in touch with, and you will maybe do work together, or you'll create projects together, or support each other, because you're finding that community of people who are, you know, a fringe, essentially. They're not the mainstream, and they often, these, you know, you feel slightly isolated maybe. But it was really great. We have some people coming from Kenya who are creating an orphanage in Kenya, and we're going to teach them the tools and help them with some design for this little community they're going to make. We have some really interesting people already signed up, and it's really, for me, the workshop I went to in last year was a really profound time, and I think just the nature of everything that's happening on the planet and where we are right now, it really fits. It's like a puzzle piece that was missing, and I think that's really what we want to give to people, is that power and that knowledge that they're not alone, and that they can create these things, and that there is a network of people who will support, and there are communities getting developed and new visions, and, you know, give them the courage to do it, actually.
And in the actual construction that you're doing in Turkey, it is both the aircrete and the earth bag, the super adobe mix, is that correct? Yeah. Can you explain a little bit of the differences in those two for perhaps people that are just new to this?
Yeah, I mean, this earth bag is, if people don't know, is, you know, the rolls of them white bags, sandbags that they use in the construction regularly. So they're very easy to get anywhere in the world, and they're cheap. And you fill them with a mix of earth and a little bit of concrete, just a small amount to just stabilize it. And it's almost earthquake resistant. Because of the nature of the concentric rings that you build up. And we use the forms, the circular forms and the dome forms, because they're inherently the strongest forms in nature. It's like the arch spun 360 degrees. So these forms just are almost indestructible in a way, especially the earth bag. The aircrete is a slightly more ephemeral material. It's a lot lighter, as you can tell. It's called aircrete, so we're putting like natural washing up liquid into a air compressor and mixer that injects it into a form into this concrete, and you make these very light blocks, and you can basically compose your aircrete dome structure using, we use these compasses that we put into the ground and create this. It's a really interesting process, because it's very quick for people to learn, and you know, really they can build a smaller project, test it, and then, you know, get some friends together or volunteers. There's a lot of volunteers out there wanting to learn this stuff. So, they can literally build their home for $10,000. It's really a fantastic opportunity.
And about how much square meters would a 10,000? Someone actually asked a question, Maria. I'm going to bring your question in now. She wanted to know what's the average size dome house and the cost, and do you design them?
Yeah, of course we work on design stuff, and we can support people in there, if they have, some thoughts on what they want to design. They're not necessarily, it is, we encourage outside living a lot, and we don't want, I've designed a lot of mansions, a lot of big houses and these things, and there's a lot of places that never get ever used, and there's holes. But I would say that, you say you've got a 5-6 diameter living room space, and then you've got a 4 or 5 meter diameter, a bedroom, and a dorm, small dorm for a bathroom. And the great thing about this is literally you can just add on over time. You can develop because it's cheap, and once you know how to do it, you can, okay, well, this weekend and or next week, I want to build a bedroom for your youngest who's getting a bit older, and you want him, sleep on his own. So yeah, it's very flexible, but $10,000 gets you the basic, like a one bedroom with a living space, and kind of a little bathroom attachment. This is
A little kitchen, a little cooking area, whether
yeah,
it's
like obviously somewhere you can live with water, with a little solar panel, a little kitchen set up, a bathroom shower. Like, yeah, I mean, not just a shell, but we're talking about a standard finish of quality space. And the great thing about these spaces, they are so interesting anyway. You don't need to all this decoration and nonsense to make your empty box feel like a home. It already has that.
Yeah, like Marie and others said, they love the design of the turkey dome house. And I know that on the website, both on yourhavenearth.org and on the BioVita website, there is more information about the workshop in Turkey, what all will be included, and what people will be learning there. And we have just a few minutes. Also, Ashav has video training instructions on his website as well. Do you just want to take a minute to talk about that?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I went through all of his courses actually before I went to Africa to his workshop. He has a full course on the natural building, on the actually creating the dorms, creating these constructed wetlands. Basically, everything that he did to make his property self-sufficient in South Africa, make it into this abundant, kind of a permaculture property. He's videoed and documented this, and he's really a kind of impassioned guy who, really kind of inspires people. He's very, excited about what he's doing, and he loves the earth, and he loves growing, and he loves recycling water, and he loves designing, creating these kind of things. So, yeah, they can, if people don't have, aren't able to come to Turkey. Obviously, it's a big investment for people. Maybe they don't have the time, but I would definitely encourage them if they're interested to look at the workshops online that Alosha has, because I think it's the next best thing and can prep people for coming to a workshop or for even trying out some stuff on their own.
And it's just a great collaboration that you and Ashav are doing and all the people that have been called together. And we are going to do an after the show. We're going to continue when this show comes to a close. So Momo, we'll get to your question there. I just wanted to give you, Paul, an opportunity just to give the contact information, your Facebook and your websites one more time, and then I'll do a little wrap up for tonight's call.
Okay, great. Yeah, I mean, first, I mean, havenearth.org is the, we just have a landing page right now, but shares some of our information, and where you can get join the mailing list and get more information. Also, for the workshop, we actually just created, actually, for this show specifically, a little landing page, and that's at www.yourhavenearth.org. BioVeda, BioVeda .co/heck, HEC, which is Haven Earth Center. And that will take them to a page which has both the workshop and also the training, the online courses. So people can just have a look and see if that resonates with them. I think
fantastic. And I'm also going to add that information to the archive of this show before the archive gets posted. So if you didn't get that link down, it will be in the archive description of the show. Paul, I just want to thank you so much for spending this time and for following your passion and really taking that leap of faith. I think you're an amazing inspiration to people who have been having that question of, do they move off of their corporate path into the path that really feeds their soul? So I want to thank you so much for that. I look forward to a little more conversation on our after the show segment, which will go up on the YouTube channel. Listeners, I just want to let you know once again, next week, my guest will be Susie Hansen, a conscious contactee and author of Dual Soul Connection. Saturday morning early, we're doing a teleconference for the Solar Eclipse Link Up. And next Wednesday, August 15th, the next series of the Wednesday teleconferences start. We're going to be focusing on lucid dreaming for star family connection. Paul, Don hasn't played us off yet. So is there anything you want to leave as your closing thoughts for those that have been listening in, your concept of the new earth or whatever your heart draws you to share?
I think what I would share is that now is the time, really. Mm-hmm. Now is the time. It's being called in now and supported in so many ways. And I think people just need, it's really a small step actually now, I think, for people to take. So just find that courage in yourself and start doing it because it will transform your life, really.
Thank you so much, Paul. Thank you, listeners. Please help spread the word about Threshold to Ascension Radio. We're just launching, and it's our intention to bring you more and more of these amazing interviews with people who are walking their path and who have guidance to share how they got through the yeah buts of their minds into the gift of truly walking your spirit walk. Paul, thank you so much for spending this time with me, and I'll see you in a minute on Skype. Good night, everyone. Many blessings.
Good night.